Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Tuesday evening Dhamma class from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, on June 26, 2018. My Dhamma talk and our Sangha discussion is on the Tsimshapa Sutta. This sutta is also known as the Handful of Leaves Sutta. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. So this is a sutta, a simple sutta called the Tsimshapa Sutta, more commonly known as the Handful of Leaves. Thanissara Bhikkhu wrote an entire small book on this one sutta, and it's a great book. In this sutta, the Buddha is describing the pure and direct focus of his Dhamma. He knew the foolishness and cruelty of continuing ignorance of Four Noble Truths by teaching anything that would develop further confusion and deluded thinking. He knew that because of his own direct experience. He studied with all the renowned spiritual teachers of his time and found all of those teachings in different ways to be continuing his own ignorance through distracting. Even though they might have made him and many other people initially feel good, the cruelty in that is just that, the teaching something that just makes you feel good but continues your distraction and doesn't lead to understanding, doesn't lead to wisdom. So he spent his entire 45-year teaching career teaching something very specific that got right to the point and could in no way lead to further distraction. In fact, it really couldn't lead to any misinterpretation. The misinterpretations have come by the adaptations and accommodations and embellishments that have been made to the Buddhist teachings. I'll skip the rest of the introduction and just get right to it. The Tsimshapa Sutta. On one occasion, the Buddha was staying with a group of disciples in a Tsimshapa forest. That's an Indian rosewood. It's a Tsimshapa tree. He reached down, picking up a handful of leaves. He then asked those gathered, "What is greater in number, the leaves in my hand or those in the trees?" The disciples replied, "The leaves in your hand are few, the trees have many more." The Buddha continues, "Just as the leaves in the trees are more numerous, the things that I know from direct knowledge are far more numerous than what I teach as my Dhamma. The reason I do not teach these other things is that they are not part of my Dhamma, they are not related to my Dhamma, and they do not support the principles of a life integrated with the Eightfold Path." So the Buddha is not only talking about what might be called mystical teachings, but he's also talking about practical things. He's not talking about how to change the wheel on a chariot. It's a useful knowledge, isn't it? But it doesn't relate to his Dhamma. He's not even talking about how to successfully beg for food. That's an important part of somebody who's left the home life or the homeless life. It's not part of the Dhamma. When the Buddhist teaching the Dhamma, he teaches the Dhamma, and that's the point that he's making here. He doesn't teach other things. He's very, very clear about not introducing anything else as a Dhamma teaching. Now, of course, one-on-one in practical settings, he would talk about other things. But when he's teaching the Dhamma, he teaches the Dhamma for those reasons just explained.
So he's also excluding the rules for the monks.
Yes, that's an entirely different teaching. And it developed over time, and it was always taught as something different. Even in the inclusion in the Pali Canon, there's a separate set of books for behavior within a so-called Sangha or spiritual community, not part of the Dhamma. But when you read the Vinaya, you can see how the Dhamma applies to it, but it's a separate teaching. It's a good example of it. So much so that when they started preserving the Buddhist teachings at the first Buddhist council, they didn't conflate the two. They in fact, two of the Upali is the one who mostly presented the Vinaya, the rules for monastic behavior, and Ananda recounted the suttas, the Buddha's direct teachings. And those became two distinct books in the Pali Canon. And it wasn't until many, many years later that third book, the Abhidhamma, was added. And you know how I feel about that. The Buddha continues, "These other things do not lead to disenchantment, to dispassion, to calm, or to direct knowledge. They are not related to my Dhamma, and they do not support the principles of a life integrated with the Eightfold Path. These other things do not lead to disenchantment, to dispassion, to calm, to direct knowledge, to cessation, or to self-awakening." It's an important line to remember, to self-awakening. These other things do not lead to unbinding from views ignorant of Four Noble Truths. And then he says, I teach Four Noble Truths, meaning this is stress, this is the origination of stress, this is the cessation of stress, and the Eightfold Path is the path developing the cessation of stress. The Buddha said that over and over again. This is what I teach, and I teach nothing else. This is what I teach. I teach these things because they are related to my Dhamma and they support the principles of a life integrated with the Eightfold Path. These things that I teach lead directly to disenchantment, to dispassion, to calm, to direct knowledge, to cessation, and to self-awakening. I got a great email from an online student, and he became a little bit confused with this idea of disenchantment. And he says, are you saying that we should be disenchanted with the Four Noble Truths? And it's easy to go there when you're not, when you don't have a complete understanding of what the Buddha is teaching. And of course, in context, and understanding the cause of suffering, which is ignorance of Four Noble Truths, it's ultimately disenchantment with our own ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Disenchantment with the experience of constantly seeking sensory stimulation because of that initial ignorance. And that's the disenchantment that the Buddha is talking about. These things that I teach lead directly to unbinding from views ignorant of Four Noble Truths. This is why I teach these things. So this is your practice. Understanding stress, understanding the origination of stress, experiencing the cessation of stress, and finally developing the Eightfold Path leading to the cessation of stress. That's the end of the sutta. Any questions? Pretty simple and direct, isn't it? It's such an important sutta. Its simplicity and its directness and maybe even its brevity, you could lose sight of how important this teaching is. It's one of those suttas that we should always keep in mind. This is what he teaches and this is why I teach it. This is the purpose. This is what we're doing here. Of course, it almost seems too simplistic and too mundane to say, well, I'm going to put in all this effort. I'm going to develop the Eightfold Path just so I can understand stress. Until you understand the ongoing distraction of stress and our contribution to stress. Where that preoccupation with always trying to keep myself satisfied or always avoiding anything that might take away from my satisfaction or happiness is the ongoing distraction of life, and it keeps our minds focused outside of our body, in the past, in the future, or objectified as to what's occurring now to me, rather than simply being present with a calm and peaceful mind with life as life unfolds. That's the secret of the Dhamma. It's the secret of mindfulness, to simply be present with what's occurring. That's what the Buddha's referring to here. Any questions about this? Then we'll go around the room. All right, we'll start with Ron. Ron, good to see you tonight.
I don't have much tonight. I'm a little drowsy. Didn't get my nap under the acupuncture.
I'm glad you're here. Lorna, good to see you tonight.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Obviously, it's about the Four Noble Truths. I'm not sure I think about the Four Noble Truths as the Four Noble Truths like that. I think when I'm going about my day and I think of stress, and if I'm in a stressful situation, and I understand what's going on, and that's the relief that the Four Noble Truths give me at the moment. That I can understand that I'm wishing things to be different and thinking about who I think I am, and you know, it just gives me an understanding of what's going on in my mind when I get stressed, when I feel stressed, and you can always relate it back to wanting things to be different and believing yourself, as you know, in the anatta sense, and just believing your own anatta, if you will. It always kind of relates back to that, always. But you can understand it when you, at odd moments in life, or in the day that you can just understand it. And I think that's really how the Four Noble Truths on a day-to-day, hour-by-hour situation helps me the most, I think, really. I just understand what's going on. So that's a help right there.
Yeah. Thank you. That's the practical integration of the Eightfold Path. That's the refined mindfulness, that you simply recognize stress arising and stress passing away without needing it to be any different. Thank you for that description. David, good to see you tonight. How are you?
Great little sutta. Of course, the way I think, I immediately look up what a samsara tree looks like and what the leaf looks like. And I thought of Helen. So that's what it looks like.
Oh, thank you. It's so funny because Russ was looking at guitars and they were made out of
rosewood,
and I'm thinking, how big do the roses get that you can make something out of wood? But of course, it's not from the same thing we call a rose.
Because if you look at that,
it's beautiful.
If you take that metaphor, this handful of leaves versus what's in the trees, if you look at that leaf, there's so much more involved with that leaf.
Yeah,
there's so much.
Can I see it?
Yeah. It's,
thank you, Helen.
So, of course, I start thinking about something else. I remember this earlier sutta that you said, and this is the beauty of Google. I literally don't remember that one. I put in, what's that one? This is how I said it. What's that one that Ananda is talking to Buddha and says how easy dependent origination is? And I think it's the Mahanadara, something like that.
Yeah.
But essentially, Ananda is saying it can't be any clearer than clear. And the Buddha says, woe son, it's not so easy.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it's a handful, if you look at how much is involved, you have enough to worry about, which you have to worry about. Don't worry about these great questions. Don't worry about, how to, be a monk. Worry about the things you need to worry about.
Mm.
Yeah, wow. And it's also saying, don't worry about the outer expression of your practice, because it is simple and it's direct, but it disentangles all of our entanglements with the world.
And part of that sutta was, if you don't have penetrative understanding, it will just be this tangled ball of twine and you'll just get confused. So even though he went through this whole, I think it was 9 of the links, because 9 is so far along, that went on and on and on. It's very involved, but it really truly is just, it's that handful of leaves, but there's a lot involved.
Yeah. And so the important reminder is how important it is to keep it focused and not introduce other things. So many times the Buddha came back to that point. Forget about all that other stuff. It's right here. It's this. And even that the dimension of being rightly self-awakened and right within reminds us that this is a process that requires that our minds be united with our body. And anytime we start attaching something to that, we become objectified outside of our bodies, don't we? Keep it simple, keep it direct. And eventually, we awaken and we see this. But as Lorna was explaining, we can't have the experience of awakening until we have the experience of awakening. But along the way, there's benchmarks. We have realizations. We become more calm. We become more present. Our relationships with other people improve. Our outlook on life gets better. We stop taking things so personally.
And you can't rush it.
And you can't rush it.
Mary and I were talking about tranquility. You can't work any harder to get to tranquility than your practice is going to allow it.
Yeah, or you lose it, don't you?
Yeah.
I wish I was more tranquil. Now! Thank you, David. That the suggestion about Ananda, that was great. I've been working on it for a while. David asked me, or just suggested that, like we did with Sariputta and Moggallana, to have a teaching on Ananda, and I'm working on it. But there's so much there. It's almost another book.
I just here's this attendant that was there for all these teachings, 82,000 and 84,000,
yeah.
And seeing all these people awaken, and he didn't awaken until after the Buddha passed.
Yeah.
You know, here's a guy who's really committed.
Oh, yeah.
What do I got to do here?
Yeah.
But he always was like so attached, even when, who was it, one of the early awakened ones died later on, and somebody brought his bowl and robe back to the Buddha and says, so-and-so has passed away, and Ananda just loses it.
Yeah.
He's distraught.
Yeah. Even at the in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, I know I've been threatening to teach that one of these days, and I will. Ananda, you know, realizes the Buddha is going to die soon, and he kind of loses it there. What's going to happen to us? Who's going to teach us? The Buddha says, "I've given you everything you need to know. It's up to you now." But, so, and even that's a good thing to bear in mind. Ananda was there for every teaching the Buddha gave. He never gave up. He continued with right effort, and eventually he did awaken. And it's because of his persistence and right effort that we have the suttas preserved as they are. Because along the way, with his deepening concentration, he developed a word-perfect memory. He remembered every word the Buddha ever taught. And that's why we have this tonight. Mary, good to see you tonight. How are you?
Good to see you, John. Good to see everybody. There's so much here in this little sutta. The concept of staying laser focused on, you know, the leaves in the hand and paying attention to the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. We all learn this by living in different situations, right?
Yeah.
And some of our situations have very deep rooms or very familiar people in them, whatever. So it's easy to lose the focus, no matter how, you know, penetrative. Much effort you're making, but it's by going through those experiences and coming back to not losing sight of the practice and coming back to the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, you can highlight when you're so obviously out of right view or right intention. So I guess for me, taking the, you know, that it's about what's in this hand, right? It's not about all this other stuff that you want to bring into a situation. It's about what's right here. You know, it's been well taught, and so it's on each of us, it's on me to have that laser focus to stay in on the right path and not fall into an old groove of poor behavior or you know, just behaviors pre all of this, you know.
Yeah.
And hopefully that window, you know, continues to shrink. You know, once upon a time, I remember coming here one summer, and it seemed like for weeks I was like still wrestling with the same thing over and over again. And now those windows are, you know, a couple of days or maybe a few hours before you get yourself, and you know,
yeah.
You're like, so in wrong view here, and you get yourself back on track. So it is its own reward, of course. And once again, it does all come back to right view.
Yeah.
You know, right view. Whoops, not there. Okay, back there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's going to be okay. So I love this little sutta. It almost reminded me of, like, you know, mass at the beach on Sunday. You know, they were always shorter because ooh, shorter ones. But anyway, it is appreciated, the shorter ones as well as the longer ones. The other thing I really took out of it too, for me, a running theme is I feel like I'm somebody with, you know, the fire in my belly, and that was one of the my first awarenesses, or that's not a word, one of my first experiences with being aware of the impact of these teachings on me personally, was learning to understand disenchantment and those other themes that relate back to that fire in the valley of too much enchantment, right? But I do think with what you do have with the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path is joyful engagement.
Yeah.
You know, it's not enchantment, and it's not disenchantment, but you kind of have to understand what they mean before you can get to that there is joyful engagement of the valley. So I'll leave it at that.
Wow, thank you. Yeah, the disenchantment, the word enchantment is becoming mesmerized with things.
Yeah.
And so that's
frenzy.
That's a
yeah.
huge distraction from what being mesmerized, being almost hypnotized. And so mindfulness is just the opposite of that. And it's mindfulness framed by the Eightfold Path. And like you said, it ultimately is right view. And being able to recognize that, you really explained that beautifully. In the beginning, it was hard to come back from an experience of stuck in wrong view. And now you recognize it and you come back pretty quickly. That alone is, again, I would say it's worth the price of admission, isn't it? We're able to think what we want to think when we want to think it. So thank you. Helen, good to see you tonight.
Thank you. Good to be here. I often wonder if I'll get to that point of not wanting things to be different than they are. I can get to the point of recognizing that I don't like where things are and then accepting where they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't gotten to the point where something I don't like has happened that I stop not liking that it happened. And one of the ways that I pull myself back is just hearing myself. So through my hearing, I can recognize wrong speech, wrong intention, or just wrong mindfulness. And you know, I mean, things happen, and I know that they will always happen. But I still go, if something bad happens, I still go through that step of, sure do wish that didn't happen. And then I can be grounded from there. But do you ever actually get to that point where you don't wish something bad happened? I don't know.
That type of radical acceptance ultimately comes from accepting you, who as you are presently, without the need for yourself to be any different. Because that's really what you're. When you get caught up in a situation where you want the situation, another person, or the world to be different than it is, really what you're saying to yourself is, I want my reaction to this, my view to be different than it is, instead of understanding this is simply what's occurring. And so there's times when great concern, maybe even fear or sadness, is an appropriate feeling. But when we can radically accept what's occurring and that it is appropriate, then it doesn't need to be any different. So we see things in the world, you know, it kind of happens all the time. Now it doesn't, it seems like more and more. That it'd be easy to say, I wish it was different, but that's not really helpful. That leads
no,
to...
No, I understand. On a cognitive level, I understand all of that.
Yeah.
But if something bad happens to a child, that's where I was,
And so something bad happens to a child, it's appropriate to feel sad about it, but to also understand that it's happening because of the conditions in the world that are rooted in ignorance. And that's really, that's where the release comes from, maybe even the relief, but you still feel what's appropriate. You know, again, we don't, the Buddha's Dhamma teaches us to be completely mindful human beings. And so we're not escaping from those types of things. We're deeply mindful of it, and we feel everything at a core level, because it's appropriate to what's occurring. The Buddha describes an awakened human being from right view as that person understands the nature of suffering. He doesn't teach that there is no suffering, or you don't recognize it. We understand it. It's as a consequence of having a human life. There's going to be suffering. And he described it, didn't he, beautifully? Sickness, aging, death, not getting what you want, getting what you don't want. Those are just human experiences, aren't they? But because we want them to be different, meaning I want myself to be different, that we become distracted and we lose our minds a little bit. So thank you for bringing that up. And along the way, we learn how to better see things according to right view rather than wrong view. Thank you. Rory, welcome to our Sangha. First thing I'll say is you don't have to say anything here, even though we all tend to talk a lot, I might more than others. But how was your meditation tonight?
It was good. I really enjoyed it.
You were able to engage in the method. When you were caught up in your thoughts, you noticed that and came back to your breath.
Yeah,
that's the basic practice. That's that's shamatha vipassana meditation, and that forms the foundation for integrating everything else that we talked about, including the sutta tonight. Did the sutta make any sense to you at all? Because I realize it's kind of out of context, but
I think just as a lesson, the basic concept of it was valuable, but I don't understand all of the references, but I enjoyed the story nonetheless.
Oh, good. It takes a little while to understand the context, right?
Sure.
Have you been to my website, becoming-buddha.com?
I have, yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Did you start with there's a page on there for new visitors?
I did, yeah.
I'll keep my mouth shut from now on, so you know where to start.
Yeah.
If you have any questions at all, always feel free to contact me, email. I think my phone number's around somewhere. But please continue to be part of our Sangha.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Good. Good to have you here.
Yeah,
Dawn, good to see you again tonight. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. Again, you don't have to say anything, but you're welcome to if you want.
I guess one question I had or thought was, why was it a handful?
It's a metaphor.
It's a metaphor, and you can't stretch these metaphors too far; they fall apart. It's a fair question, though, isn't it? Maybe to relate to it, it really isn't just one thing, but it's not everything either. You know, to maybe make sense of the metaphor of a handful of leaves, and it's not just one. So it's a really good question.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point of the metaphor is that it's a very focused teaching that this awakened human being taught. And whenever we pick up too many leaves, we lose the focus. So thank you for the question. I'm glad you're here tonight, and thanks for bringing this guy. How are you, this guy?
It's good to be here.
Good to have you.
Yeah, I kind of like the sutta because I like to keep things simple, and I like the metaphor as a handful of leaves because it's to me it's within a grasp, something that you can grasp and hold on to without like losing stuff. And when I try to grasp too many leaves, then they fall, and I can't grasp everything. And so it's an attainable thing to hold within your grasp, within right here.
Yeah.
And anyone who does yard work, you try to grab a handful of leaves and fill a bag, and you have 100 bags of leaves to fill. You know, leaves that fall out of your grasp are just leaves that you still have to pick up yet. Anyway, so with that being said, I like the sutta because he talks about the unbinding of ignorant views. You know, and this is what he teaches, and this is what your practice is, and that's understanding, right? He doesn't say, like for the longest time, I think in the beginning, like I guess the cognitive part of it, learning, I didn't feel like I was learning too much of it. It wasn't until the understanding through experience really started opening my eyes.
Mm.
And the unbinding of ignorant views, I think, really started to come through the cultivation of those principles of equanimity and tranquility and the calmness and the dispassion or disenchantment disentanglement that I felt. Because when I came here, I had obsessive thoughts and I couldn't stop thinking, and I was very reactive. So I went from a reactive mind to a very responsive mind, and I became less entangled in outer experiences, and that gave me the space to feel that disconnection I was still kind of involved, but I was like this engaged in whatever was going on. And I became, I took things less personal.
Yeah.
I was able to have, I heard someone say, like a clear window to look through. Mm-hmm. Things became, so I was understanding the cessation of suffering. I was starting to see what that was. I was starting to understand what it was. And that was just my mind seeing clearly. You know, and that was through the Eightfold Path.
Good.
Through right view, right understanding, right intention, and so on. You know, through mindfulness, meditation. Anyway.
Yeah, thank you. That's just it. Yeah, as you integrate the Eightfold Path, you see things differently and you stop taking life so personal. But it takes a little bit of doing. It takes some practice. But eventually, through right effort, through what we do here, you get there. And it's a personal experience. It's not something that me or anybody else can give you. But it's certainly, you use the word attainable. That's the whole point of the Buddhist teaching. This is for human beings to develop. It's not something, we don't need any special powers. We don't need any special grace. All we have to do is engage with the Eightfold Path, and we get there. Thank
certainly
you.
Didn't get it by worrying about the leaf that fell out.
That's right. Yeah, it could keep focus on what's here. Thanks, Frank. Liz, good to see you tonight. We've
good
missed
to see you.
You.
Good to see everyone. I don't really have anything to say. I'm just enjoying what other people have to say. I like this sutta. I like the simplicity of it.
Yeah,
so
me too.
All I have.
Thank you. Bonnie, good to see you tonight.
Good to see you. I'm glad to be here. I love the visual of this sutta.
Thank you. Thank you. I do too. I got a kind of a collection of a lot of short suttas, and I think I'll be teaching those for. We've covered an awful lot of material as a Sangha in the last year or two, so maybe some shorter suttas would be in. I mean, don't hold me to it, but there's a section of the Pali Canon called the Dhammapada, which is mostly in verse. And there's short sections of that that relate to specific topics, and I might be doing some of that too. So we'll see how things develop.
I'm reading the Book of Eighths these days.
From the Kodaka. Yeah.
There's some nice short things in there, to the point.
Yeah, that's a whole section of books, and included in that is a section called the Udana, which is just short teachings, but they get right to the point. Again, we'll remember everything the Buddha taught was in this context. You can see the whole Dhamma in something as short as those suttas. What was the other thing? How many of you are using the app?
I just installed it.
Yeah. It's working okay and you find it helpful?
It's sideways on my phone.
Yeah, sideways. It doesn't go. It's only. What's that?
It's only landscape?
Which is fine with me because it makes it bigger.
Oh, I did that. I can. Do you find that? I set it up that way because in portrait, it just doesn't display as well. But if you.
It's just a situation. Sometimes you like to be able to hold it upright.
If you set it
in
portrait, it should
be out. I'm sorry, Dawn?
I think if you set it in portrait, when the phone turns, it automatically goes to landscape. It's just the default of the phone.
Yeah, no, I set it up that way to only show in landscape. But I can turn that switch off, I think. So, again, thanks for the feedback. I'll do that.
Where do I find it again?
The instructions are on the home page right at the top.
Okay.
And it'll tell you what browser do you use?
Usually it sends me to Chrome.
Okay, yeah, it's pretty easy.
Mine did it automatically.
Yes.
On some it will. On some browsers, depending on what you have set up and security settings, it will just install itself. Mm-hmm. On some it won't. But if you have any trouble, just give me a call or something. But it's pretty easy. So. Good, I'm glad you find it useful. Let's finish with the Karaniya Metta Sutta, as we always do. So again, find your relaxed meditation posture and gently close your eyes and gently close your mouths. And again, take a moment to become mindful of your in-breath and your out-breath. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied. Unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class tonight. Peace.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.